Over in the far corner is Dave McNair. Dave is my favorite faculty member. Mike, I'll say something about you in a minute. Dave is my favorite faculty member because he was hired to start this year as the soil science instructor. Thank you. And I'd been doing that for six semesters in a row after Mike, in front of him, got promoted to the Associate Dean for Academic Programs position. So I am really glad that Dave is around. The three of us got some money from across campus to work on a technology support idea in combination with mastery learning. So you see some of the soils that we look at. Kentucky is a diverse state. The course that we're involved in here is Fundamentals of Soil Science course. We're using the common textbook. Will update to 2008 next semester. Two lectures a week. We don't do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We do Tuesday, Thursday. One lab, 2.5 hours, unlike our previous speaker. We're going that route. About 110 students a year, both semesters. And there's a couple of new programs coming on, sustainable agriculture and equine science and management. And some of the early indications are that they could double our student population on an annual basis. The students that we have in those programs, those acronyms there are majors. The first horticultural plant and soil, horticultural plant science, natural resource conservation and management, ag ed, the sustainable ag. All of those are required to take this course. Landscape architecture, animal science, geology, biosystems and ag engineering, equine systems, equine, what is the SM? Did I put that down wrong? Science and management, yeah. The science side policy students are required to do that. So those second list there, don't take it. What it means is it's a very diverse group of students. The embedded laboratory sections, everybody's in lab. That was Mike's doing when he came to us a few years back. He said everybody needed that tactile, experiential kind of learning, so we got with that program. Section limits at 15 TAs, coordinated by the instructor. Of course, the instructor always has a section or two, Dave, of their own, and that's a separate issue. We do have a laboratory manual that we use, and we think that helps to keep the TAs aboard on the same page. There are 10 written reports with quite a wide range of styles, and TAs are given the option of whether or not they want to do redos. Exam models, the old model, at least what I was doing, the instructor, I would grade an essay and problem items on four exams. It also included multiple choice questions, and then try to turn that back around with by the next time the class met. And of course, the issue is instructor time. If you double student numbers, now we're talking about a case where it's pretty awkward to try to pull that off. With the new model, all the exams are given online, and more about that in a minute. And they get students get instantaneous feedback, sometimes much to their chagrin. And if you're the instructor sitting at the machine and you have it set up to give automatic reports, you can see what each student got as they log off the exam. And you know, if they're looking cross, you already know, but you could see sometimes things that surprise you. Of course, however you do this, the multiple choice exams have to be well written. And we've actually had some issues with that to try to get the questions from Blackboard into a different program so we can do a discrimination analysis on them and indicate whether or not they were as good as we thought they were. And the other one there, we are shifting some of the responsibility from instructors to TAs to provide high quality feedback, and that's an issue down on the bottom there. Okay, student orientations to learning, and this is a little bit on the side, if you will, of mastery learning per se. Mastery learning simply is doing it over and over again until you get it right. This is more of a student's disposition toward learning. And if you look on the left, you know that performance orientation is what many of our students, and especially the high performing ones, often come to us carrying in their minds. Is this going to be on the test? If that question is asked, almost always underneath it is, you know, do I need to know this or not? It's like, please, these soils are the most important thing in the world. You need to know everything. What's wrong with you? And these will be the students who will come back and say, you took off too many points on that question. You know, other students may just say, that's okay. I'm not as worried. I wanted to learn it. The mastery orientation often is what faculty members, now I've had arguments with faculty about this, but I think there's a higher concentration of mastery orientation among faculty as opposed to on our students. These kinds of students, when we encounter them, and they're out there, you know that, will follow divergent interests. They will get into something and go after it. Flo, the gentleman from the University of Chicago, if you want to say his name, go ahead. The idea of getting into something so much that you forget even what time it is. And that's what some of our speakers do occasionally, you know. And clearly, you know, I'm comparing here the left and the right, but mastery orientation is a lot more adaptive than sort of the another model to orientation, which is learned helplessness. It's all an external locus of control. It's somebody else doing to me. I can't make this happen. The mastery orientation student says, I can make this happen. I can get it done. So what did we have? We have the audience response technology. You saw that different model of that in operation if you were here for John and George's presentation a little bit ago. We're not talking about that here. The online quizzes, the first line pre-coverage reading quizzes was part of the course before, so that's unchanged. The post-coverage comprehension quizzes, 5 of those during the semester, that's new, and we're giving them 2 shots at that. Ideally, they would be, you know, an unlimited sort of iterative kind of thing where they get randomized questions. We just don't have a big enough pool of questions that are targeted to the content that we're working on for those weeks to be able to do that. And then both the midterm and the final, of course, that's 2 exams, they get 1 shot at those, and those are offered closed book in contrast to the first 2 types, and they're offered in a proctored setting as opposed to the first 2 types. So that may come back in the data in a couple of minutes. There are plenty of well-documented benefits in soil science classrooms and other sorts of classrooms that we've talked about. These are some in the reference list that you'll see there. And one perhaps that is a rather remarkable one is that perhaps there are some benefits for ethnically diverse groups. I was quite surprised to see that and want to chase that down a little more. What can we do to encourage mastery learning or a mastery orientation to learning? We can give them more than 1 chance to show that they know something. That's the top line. The middle is to give them different types of assignments so that they can actually pick those. And then finally, let them select topics. So for example, like we do a state soils assignment, and they get to actually pick which soils within some parameters that they'll use for it rather than being assigned it. Trying to connect these two, the repeat chances, they can retake the online quizzes. And again, ideally, as many times as they wish, although we've heard earlier this week that seems to make little difference in their grade. I believe that well done, you know, just a brainless retaking and entering responses over and over again. I think actually re-studying, looking at it again and saying, where am I on this? It might come out differently. Okay, the different types of assignments in a large lecture, probably tough to try to coordinate that. In a lab, on the bottom pair there, choosing a soil to study, as I mentioned, might be really helpful. You give them a matrix of what they must report on about that soil, and then let them choose the soil that they want to go after. From the instructor's side of this, it certainly saves time grading the exams. They're done before you leave the classroom. No doubt. It does cost time to manage this technology, the one-time investment to get it all set up, and then an ongoing investment, of course, which is not zero. You know, it is a significant amount. We do think, though, that if those numbers come, that we'll be there. What did the students say in terms of quantitative response? Spring 2006, I was in the instructor, and there's a difference in who comes to the class in the spring and the fall in terms of what majors, and also trying to compare apples and apples here as much as possible. This is a 4-point scale quality of instruction, 3.9 in 2006, and quality of course, 3.7. So those students were pretty happy with the course the way that it was offered. I can't help think, Jim, but you got a 4.0 on one of those when you had this course. The spring 2007, with the new technology things worked into it, the quality of instruction somewhat lower, and so was the quality of the course by student perception. What about student assessment results? And these are percentage scores. The first line should be, is similar because that was done the same way both semesters. So 89.0, 86.0. Spring 2006, there were no post-coverage online quizzes, so that's a new data point for spring 2007 from those five double-shot sort of opportunity quizzes. And then the post-coverage exams, pretty similar kind of numbers from my experience have been running in the class in the upper 70s, sometimes significantly lower, sometimes slightly higher, but I'm fairly somewhere in that neighborhood. So, you know, in general, we're pleased with that. If you look at the at this column, though, you'll see, of course, that this score is on average higher than this one, which is higher than this one, and that is about open book, closed book, how much content is there, that sort of thing. Musings about the project. We had some big Blackboard issues. Hours, days at a time when the campus-wide server was down. This made our students extremely frustrated last spring. It's a matter of investing enough campus-wide in the resource. I had some issues in leaving out commas or adding periods or something in Respondus, and we could talk about that technology some other time if you want. And there was some anxiety with students because we took them to a different place from the regular classroom to take their exam because we needed the online the exam to do it. Some students do strange things, and I'm not here to bash students, please don't hear me say that, but not doing their quizzes during a 5-day window, if they're incapacitated, they're out of the state and don't have computer access, okay, that has happened, but there are students that just blow it off. And there are some references, including one that Jim was lead author on in about this course, the same course, earlier in the sequence. So thank you.
Thank you, Larry. So we have time for some questions. How many of you in this room are getting outcomes of assessment coming down? You've all showed your instructor rating, you know, overall course, instructor effectiveness and stuff like that. And I think that makes me feel good because they like me. But how do instructor ratings or overall course ratings really say what the students are learning? Do they?
It's a customer satisfaction score, you know. It really doesn't say if they're, you know, from an assessment perspective. And you addressed this to the group, and I'm standing at the microphone, so I get to talk for a minute. Anyway, yeah, it doesn't address, like, if you had specific performance objectives, like Mike talked about with the soil science exam, if you had those down, then that would be a very different kind of deal than just saying, did you like the course, did you like the teacher, which is really what we're doing. So no, they're not adequate. Nor, for example, you know, as many of us have unfortunately learned, would be student grades. Just because students got good grades in our course or passed our courses doesn't satisfy any kind of accrediting agency. For good reason, too.
I have another question. I'll let somebody else.
I guess. Paula, we have, I didn't, it was entirely open book. So, you know, there's no proctoring for the first set of pre-reading quizzes or post-coverage quizzes. And, you know, there were, unsurprisingly, some students who bombed pretty badly on the proctored exams because, you know, they hadn't taken this mastery learning kind of thing seriously. So. But to my knowledge, I didn't see any anomalous kinds of things where students, you know, who had been doing very badly suddenly jumped to the top of the pack, or students who, you know, were very high across the board in the non-proctored materials and then dropped off the map on the other. You know, there weren't, I didn't see any evidence of that, although there's nothing that we did that I did that could prevent that. That's a good point.